Good morning. Good morning, everyone. All right. Thank you for joining me in the session on strategic planning, modern strategic planning in higher ed. So this will be mostly different material from what I covered earlier. There will be some consistent themes. But just because we have a small group, can everybody just say your name and your institution and your role?
I'm June. I'm representing Houghton University now.
Houghton, yes. Congratulations. St. Francis went from St. Francis College to St. Francis University. What's your role? Trustee?
Trustee.
Okay.
Barry Hyde, Indiana Wesleyan, trustee.
Jeff Freeman, Indiana Wesleyan, trustee.
Gary Ott, Indiana Wesleyan, trustee.
Well, we have to split you guys up. Yeah, so what's going on here?
Mike Hilton, I'm board chair of Southern West. Jim Dunn, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan. This is Roger Metcalf, who's lost his voice. He's board chair of Oklahoma Wesleyan.
I'm Daniel Lane, board chair of Wesleyan Seminary and trustee at
Oklahoma.
Yep. Hi, Doris Griffin, trustee at Houghton University.
John Lane, trustee at Houghton University.
Debbie Turner Bell, trustee at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Esther Lee de Griffiths, with Wesley Center.
Peter Rigby at Kingswood University, trustee.
Great. So I was sort of kidding, but I wasn't really kidding, that we probably do want to have you sit a little. So why don't we start a new table over here with one of you? Let's consolidate and then put you to this. No one is yours here, right?
Debbie.
Oh, okay. Let's put you two up, even though she has to speak because you're in the same. So, because I'm going to do an exercise. I want you to be sitting with different trustees. This was a pretty diverse one. We still have you two. Why don't we take you and put you over there? Let's take, was anybody in the same institution here? Okay, do you mind going over here? I'm dissolving your group.
I got to move. Dissolving my group.
And it may not be perfect. I'm just trying. That's okay. Do we got a Houghton back there? Okay, you go back there.
All right.
And anybody doubled up here?
Well, yes.
But yeah. Okay. All right. She may not be able to see very well from that angle. I'll walk over here sometime. Okay. Great. Well, that's mostly for the exercise at the end. So you already heard my background. I'll give you a few more details about strategic planning. So I first got exposed to strategic planning when I was at St. Francis University. I took a class called Management by Objectives. Anybody remember when this was all the rage in the 80s? And fell in love with it and said, I want to be a strategic planner. And actually wrote my honors thesis with a strategy for myself, with a mission, vision, values, priorities. And I'll tell you that story in a minute. But that was my first exposure. Did some projects in strategic planning and bankruptcy litigation for PwC. Got an MBA from Carolina. Went to McKinsey & Company. So I did strategic consulting there, including for higher ed. And then came back for a PhD in strategy. And so I finished that around 2000. So for the past 20 years, I've been doing teaching strategy to executives and doing strategic planning projects all the time, always with MBAs and undergrads on my teams. And I do a lot of projects in higher ed. So I love strategy. I love strategic planning. I'm a big fan of it. I know it's often done poorly, so I get that. And some people aren't excited about it because of that. But you'll find that I'm a huge, huge fan of strategic planning. So that's kind of my background related to strategic planning. So what I'm going to talk about, and again, this first part probably picks up a little bit from the first talk, is priorities for education. Then I'll talk about best practices for strategic planning, and then we'll do a team exercise. And Again, these slides will be shared, too, with everybody. I think they have a dissemination. Plus, my email's on there. If you want anything from me, you can stay in touch with me, and I can send them to you. So those are the three topics. Modern priorities. This was a blog I wrote, $6 million man. Again, I have two research associates, and I was preparing for the session, and they're like, what's a $6 million man? I said, only my favorite show growing up as a kid. And then one of them said, I think my grandmother used to watch it. I was like, so you remember better, stronger, faster. And so these are a couple of my highlights that I, again, wrote about. You can see more details in the blog, but here's the essence of it. How can modern strategic planning be better? One is truly seek differentiation. There's just not enough differentiation in higher ed, in my opinion. So many institutions, you could just substitute my university for yours. You look at their strategies, it's like, what is really different about what you do? Anything? Teaching, research, and service. Is that okay? We all do that. What is it that's special about your institution? And I alluded to the Wesleyan story is unique. Well, now you got to go one step further. So what's different about, you know, within the Wesleyan universities, what's different about yours? So there's another level of differentiation. So, and the lens is important. The lens of, for both faculty who teach there, staff who work there, as well as students who want to go there. They all have to understand what's different about this place. Strategic planning should focus on strategy, not operational issues. I've seen strategic plans that have everything but the kitchen sink in there. So it's like, everything that's going on campus has to be in the strategic plan. Every initiative, every area. Nobody can be left out. And so I am not a fan of that. My philosophy is do the research broadly, do a survey of your whole community, do a SWOT analysis, but then pick a couple big things that are going to change the place and put your strategic plan around that. Don't make it an operational plan. Don't try to tell everybody, here's your three things to do, everybody in the institution. It should be higher level. It should be specific. It should be focused on just a few things. And you should be unapologetic in saying, we're not trying to cover everybody in this. We're going to cover our change items. What are the things that need attention right now? That's what I think is strategic. What are the things that are going to hurt us, have bigger impact? And tackle the hard challenges. I spoke to you before about what I think the hard challenges are. One is fiscal responsibility. Are we covering our expenses? And if you are, great. Then that's maybe not an issue for you. The next one is enrollments. What are we doing about enrollments? And the third really now is taking care of your people. I didn't mention that in the last meeting. But you got to take care of your faculty, staff, and students, quite frankly, in terms of mental health, physical health. It's just a rough time. So that... 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said that's a huge strategic priority. It sounds weird that you wouldn't take care of your people, but it wasn't like a huge issue. You're going to lose your employees if you don't take care of them. The students are going to drop out. That's what it is right now. How can it be stronger? Craft strategy slogans. So I've seen mission statements, and I have. Unfortunately, I did not get into analyzing all the strategies of your institutions. If we do more work together, I will do that because I always like to see let me see your strategic plan. What do you have for mission? What do you have for vision? What do you have for values? Most of the ones I see have too many words in it, and they're generic words. So the really good ones have concise strategy slogans that like captures the essence of what's different about us. And I'll give you some examples of that. I have one coming up, but I'll go ahead and tell it to you. Arizona State University. They flipped their mission. Remember how I said before, institutions often judge by themselves by quality by how high a percentage of the people they reject. Arizona State flipped it, said, we will judge ourselves not by whom we exclude, but whom we include and how they succeed. That was it. I mean, can you feel how clear that is? That gives me goosebumps. That's a unique statement. So, traditional people are like, no, U.S. News and World Report, we're going to lose traction. We're evaluated on percent, low percent acceptance. I don't care. I want you to include more people and find different ways to serve them. That's why online education grew so much for Arizona State. Over the past 12 years, they went from 30,000 to 300,000 students. It's unbelievable what they've done with that kind of power. So strategy slogans, I have some examples coming up, but that's just one. You need to have a really succinct mission and a succinct vision that everybody can recall. Not three, four paragraphs or even three or four sentences. Now you can have those, but then you got to pull a slogan out and say we need something that kind of captures the essence of it. Also making it stronger, involve your campus. Now I don't mean take a year to do strategy. It should be no more than a semester or a summer period. But you should do surveys and have some open town hall meetings and involve people in the process. It shouldn't be the Board of Trustees writes the strategy, for example, for the campus. It should be the campus at the recommendation of the trustees, and then, trustees should also be involved. I've done this. Even some people at AGB are like, trustees shouldn't be involved in the strategic plan. I'm like, why not? They're smart. They care about the place. You should be surveyed. You should be involved in the process because you're a key constituent. That's my philosophy. Last one is manage change carefully, and I'll show you at the end the Cotter model. So don't try to change everything at once and put it all in the first strategic plan because people will be really frustrated and you won't make progress. Pick and choose and do it sequentially. The last thing, how can it be faster? I mentioned this already. Don't spend a year doing strategic planning. Everybody gets burnt out on it. It's too much energy. It's going to be obsolete. And you're going to be starting another one. So about six, about 4 months, is about what you should do. Keep the planning horizon to 3 years. I know capital campaigns, have to go longer for facilities, but trying to manage a 5 or 6 year strategic plan, there's too much uncertainty. So keep it in 3 years and then kind of rejuvenate it again. And then think of strategy as a living document. It's not supposed to be overly pragmatic. I'm not going to go through all these because I already hit them. In fact, I think I mentioned every one of these. 1,200 colleges are approaching non-financially viable status. 1,200 out of 4,000. Oh, there's one I didn't mention. We have more brick-and-mortar colleges than student demand. We have about a 15% oversupply in our industry. That coupled with the decreasing students, it's just going to be crazy hard to get students. We literally have to shut some of these campuses down.
Paul, you said there were two failures. Can you assume that those were public? Can you say those were recent
failures? I put it in my to read later file. I can't recall. No, but there aren't a ton, quite frankly. I think there were maybe 12 last year, and everybody's saying there's going to be more. There's a lot of exit barriers to closing a campus.
The pandemic money is still keeping people afloat, too.
And the pandemic money, $77 billion kept a lot of people afloat. And they didn't fix their fundamental problems with that money. They just covered it up. So it just kicked the can down the road. But there will be more closures and consolidations. Openness to inter-institution collaboration, mergers, and alliances. I do think if I was an advisor to all of you, I think you got some magic if you could just break, and I haven't done a lot of deep dive on this. This is just a quick cursory look. If you really do have as much in common as you probably do and probably have unique offerings on different campuses, and I know Indiana Wesleyan has the lead in online, right? If you could just have one strategy, you don't have to have just one identity. You can have separate identities. But if you had one strategy to go to market, and then you started exploring some of the cost synergy signs. But somebody asked a question before about, that wasn't you because you can't speak. Somebody asked a question about what would you suggest for beyond cost synergies. I just think go to market together. Become the Wesleyan family of institutions and have and do joint marketing, joint offerings, special hybrid programs. That's inter-institution collaboration. That, so you don't have to build a faculty in every area that you want to, where you only have three students taking a major. Let somebody else run that one. And they'll take the classes through that one. But they can be on your campus physically. You're nodding your head. Do you think this has potential?
I think this is a phenomenal idea. What denomination
is
doing this?
Nobody.
I
know, I just got goosebumps that you could, I mean, that there's a lot of reasons why I could make, I assume you would have similar messaging, like you, and I didn't hear the talks, but you can holistically grow as a person, you know, find your faith and your career. I could think of some campaigns that would resonate.
So you know we tried this.
Oh, I did not know that.
For the last year.
For full collaboration? What happened? Was somebody running it?
Yes.
Was AGB doing it?
Nope.
Oh.
You try to do it internally.
I thought we were still in process.
What's that?
I thought we were still in process.
His face suggests it may be in progress, but it's not making enough progress. Is that what that face suggests?
Yeah,
what is there a big project team with a lot of exposure and project management?
Some other people.
Okay. All right, we don't need to go
answer
deep.
The question.
All right, so there's some, whatever it is, there's some energy that has gone toward this.
Your experience with St. Francis and the church, the value added to the church, and going to the church asking for money and all that. Did you do that with St. Francis? Did they go and look at, hey, what are we adding value to the church? Whole, and then we can get the church to jump on board and give us more money. And maybe we could do that. Maybe we could come up with something that would really add value, not just to the church, but the evangelical community, that they would jump on board and say, hey, let's fund this. Let's fund this as a whole.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, because clergy need to continue to be educated. So you got lifelong learning of clergy. You got pipeline of clergy,
yes.
Because part of what you do is you produce, right, future clergy, right, the seminary. So there's a vested interest. I don't know what else they would be. It's an interesting idea. You need to have a value proposition to them if you're going to ask them to make additional investment in you. So it's. It and that's probably more the talk. Isn't there a person doing development talk? Russ's brother. Maybe he'll have some better ideas on that. But I think there is something. If you could speak to what are you doing for us? What's your value add to us?
What's in it for me?
Well, there has to be something. Yep.
People who influence them.
Yep.
Right? That this product is going to make a difference.
It has to be modern. It has to be relevant. It has to be meaningful. It has to be digital. It has to be a reasonable cost. There's another bullet there, financial support for underserved segments. There are people probably who want to go to your institutions who just can't afford it. I mean, I said you're a moderate, but that's a high tuition. You know, another interesting strategy, I just got goosebumps on this one. Hopefully you guys will write this one down. I tried proposing at St. Francis, it got shot down, but now I've seen three or four institutions do it. In fact, there was an article in the Chronicle recently, dramatically drop your tuition, because you're probably at about a 60% discount rate. You know what that means? That means that even though you say $30,000, you're, you know, $15,000. So drop it to 15. There would be a lot more people who There are people who don't even apply because they're just, I can't afford that. But I can afford $15,000. I'm making these numbers up, but that is, again, I remember bringing this up at a trustee meeting at St. Francis 12 years ago, and they're just like, what? It's like, if we're getting that much, in fact, I advised it to one of my clients. I was doing a consulting project, and I said, if they were competing against high-quality in-state public institutions. I said, do a campaign that everybody in this state gets half price. So everybody in Indiana, you got a lot of public competition in Indiana. Everybody in Indiana comes to Indiana Wesleyan for $15,000.
Don't change net tuition?
Oh, no. Don't give discounts. You'll get the same money. Right. You don't change your net tuition. Is there an alarm going on? Should we run for our lives?
So Houghton did that.
Houghton did this.
Yeah, you saw the number.
Oh, Houghton, and they dropped it.
Right.
Okay, how did it go?
I was just saying, I don't think we marketed it as well as we should have marketed it, and we're working on fixing that. But
the other way you can do it is to be much more specific in just giving the discount away. Like, again, saying, what state is Houghton in?
New York.
So all New York residents, 50% discount to come to Houghton.
Yeah.
You're going to give it anyway, but you just say, what? I get half price? That's another way.
We dropped the discount significantly, and our sticker price is a lot lower. But we didn't have a marketing program
to tell everybody about it.
With it.
And you should go after institutions that are closer to that tuition, because now you can say, you can pay the same but get a whole different experience.
We're fixing it, but we could have done a better job early on if we had coordinated it.
Yeah, it's important to tell the message at the same time. Okay, good. Good discussion. So here are what I've come and I've spoken to all these, so probably no surprises, but I wrote this article for Trusteeship Magazine. Again, send me an email. I'll send you anything you want. If you like this topic, I'll send you this article. My email is on my slide deck. But purpose, products, partnership. So I said, in the modern era, here are the new priorities for higher ed. One is you got to be clear, even more clear about, and we've talked a lot about this, about your purpose. Why are you here? Don't give me a generic mission statement. Give me something unique. And for the vision, where are we headed? Don't say be the best Wesleyan University. I mean, you got to be specific about what you're trying to accomplish. And then you got to change what you offer. So degrees, non-degrees, different types of customers, and online. I've talked about that. Partnerships, I've talked about this. Joint research, private-public partnerships, co-curriculum development among institutions. And profitability, it used to be a bad word, maybe even in your institutions. No one wants to talk about profitability. Don't be so businessy. I'm actually writing a book right now, and I'm toying around with just coming out and saying, run your universities, run your colleges and universities like the businesses that they are. I'm thinking about writing. I know there are people who will kick me out of academics, but these are businesses. They have to pay the bills. They serve a business function. I know there's uniqueness, especially when it comes to religious schools. I understand the mission should be different, but that's also true in private industry. They're not all the same. But anyway, where's your revenue coming from? Do you have control over your spend? And have you done an academic program review? Again, faculty will fight you on academic program reviews. You are going to have your presidents. Any presidents in here? The president has to have support from the board. First, encouragement, more than encouragement, mandate to make changes, but then support, because faculty will go to a. What's your name?
Jim.
So Jim institutes a program review and says we're going to cut half of our programs because they're all underwater, and we're going to launch brand new programs in this space, this space, this space. Get ready for a faculty vote of no confidence. And he will only do that if he's a really bold leader and he doesn't care so much about his next job, and he has the support of the board. A lot of presidents are worried about their next job, so they never want to stir the pot up. So this is a program reviews are very touchy. And again, it's you have some programs that aren't doing well. And then the faculty say, well, it's important for our liberal arts education and it's our identity. Well, we got to do something differently. You had a question? Yeah.
And it filters all the way down the faculty. All you're going to take away, instead of abundance mentality of we're going to attract more people,
yeah,
we're going to have a bigger funnel falling in here, and that'll take care of a little bit of you might lose.
Yeah.
That's what we got to flip.
Yeah.
We haven't been able to do that.
It is hard. It is hard. Especially without a real clear vision of what this is going to be and where the benefits are going to come from. So you should not do cuts without some thought of where the growth is going to come from and a clear message of that. To ask people to cut things just to cut is really demoralizing. I always say you gotta say, we're headed this direction, and these are the positives that are going to come. Now, we got to free up resources, and we got to get some efficiencies, but we're going to make investments, and you got to have money to make investments in other areas. But it may not be all the people who are currently on your campus. And that's when they start freaking out.
Question?
Yep.
In terms of cutting programs, you know, many institutions are looking from a financial point. We just can't teach everything we're teaching. So, and what many times comes back, and particularly in our Christian institutions, is there are certain core areas, and you comment on this too, that we just can't cut. They don't make, they lose money every year, but we have to maintain this. How does the board get their hands around those core areas, even though they lose money year after year, but we still must continue to teach those? How do you do that?
An independent review? An independent assessment, an outsider looking at it with data, surveys of students, benchmarking to other institutions. Because the faculty would tell you all their areas are core and critical. And it really shouldn't be something the trustees are doing. They should be just asking the questions. The president is the president and the provost are the ones who do these reviews. But they are, and then when it comes to the provost is representing the faculty. So they're typically in a really bad situation. Because they're like, I'm kind of one of them, so the president has to be really bold, and the president can get shot down. So an independent review is often best with data. You could do, I don't know what you were doing across all of them, but if there was all of Wesleyans were doing it, and it's like, we got to do it because everybody's doing it, or one Wesleyan does a review of the other Wesleyan, I don't know how that would go. I wrote an article about how to do it, too, in Chronicle of Higher Ed. So if that's of particular interest, it was called, The Elephant in the Room, How to Cut Academic Costs. And I talked about some thoughts of designing it. So send me an email, and I'll send that to you. pnf@unc.edu. I think it's on my front email. pnf@unc.edu. Okay. Let's see how much time I got. We're till 10:15. So best practices for strategic planning. So I know it's another 4 P's framework, so apologies. I did this one a long time ago. But I wrote an article. If somebody says, what's in strategy? I say, okay, I couldn't find an article, so I wrote this. I said, you got to cover these things in your strategy. And I suggest a one-page strategy. One page. Mission, vision, values, priorities. Now, you can have more details of implementation elsewhere, but I want to be able to see the whole strategy in one page. So first, you've got to cover position. Who are we? Mission. You already saw that. Mission, vision, values. Very succinct statements. Then priorities. No more than three. What are our three priorities for the next 3 years? In those priorities, you should have some BHAGs. Big hairy... Oh, sorry, I was going to ask you. Anyone know what that stands for?
Big, hairy, audacious goals.
Yes. So don't just be incremental. Have a whole... Let's double the number of students in Wesleyan institutions in the next 6 years. We're going to double the number. What? Yeah, let's do it. Let's double the number. But that's going to take a lot of change and a lot of collaboration. That's what I'm like. That if there's this overarching clear thing we're going for, I'm making that up. But, you know, okay, how are we going to get there? Again, making this up. We're doing one strategy for all the Wesleyans. All right. Our vision is to double the number of students in Wesleyan universities. First thing we're going to do is have complete collaboration of academic programs across institutions. So that's a whole priority. Second one is we're going to do joint marketing. We're going to hire a national advertising, we're going to do a national advertising campaign, or a regional, depending, probably regional. But we're going to have a firm help us with that. We're going to put $250,000 into advertising. And the third thing is we're going to do a huge fund. We're going to do a huge fundraising effort that includes this. I love your idea. A strategy to get more money from the church, but it's going to take work to figure out what they want, and more philanthropy, and better financials from each institution. So I just made that up. There's your three priorities. Let's go do it. That kind of clarity is what I'm talking about. Nobody wrote that down, so apparently it wasn't that good. Did you get that? Okay. I love doing that. That's what I do as a consultant. I come in, I do interviews, surveys, and I say, all right, let's get it. Let's get just a few priorities. What do you want to become? All right, and what's it going to take? And get away from the noise. And don't put every little thing for everybody in every, just get it focused on the right things and get action on it. But then it's going to have, you're going to put money behind it. So there's nothing worse than saying something is a priority, but you're not going to back it up. So if you make a change in strategy, you don't tell people about it, you're not going to get you have to back it up with advertising budget for the communication piece. Or if you really are going to be serious about a program review, you got to have a task force working on it that has the support of the president and the trustees, and they have a mandate to cut 20% of the programs. Not 50, 20. The 20% lowest programs, and I want to start 20% new programs. There you go. All right, now, how you get about doing that, I mean, the details, you've got to involve faculty. You've got to get the faculty themselves to say, okay, art history's got to go. I'm making that one up. I don't mean to pick on art history. French has got to go. In fact, all languages are gone. We're going to double our investment in business. Okay, and then you track performance. I'm going to show you a dashboard. I'm a big fan of a trustee dashboard. Do you all have them? You're nodding your head, so maybe you already have these. It just kind of shows where you are on your progress toward your strategy. So the mission statement, why are we here? What is unique about us? How do we serve key constituents? It must be clear and understood. I put this language on there. It should make you proud. I'm proud to be part of this institution for what we stand for. The vision is a description of where you're headed, and you're excited. It makes you excited. I love this idea of progress. And the values make you feel like you belong. And I used to say that before diversity, inclusion, belonging was on everybody's talk chart, but you should feel like you belong to this place. And you should be able to fit those on a T-shirt. That's what Peter Drucker said. Mission, vision, and values. Eventually, you get into the priorities, And then each priority will have some objectives and initiatives, but don't go crazy in over planning it. Just keep it at a high level in terms of the strategy. Here's an example. I made this up. The mission of this institution is creating leaders to impact society. So they're really big into leadership, people development. Vision, become the university that students call home. Values, student-focused, equity and diversity, accountability. And then three priorities, a compelling vision around student success, personalized education, and athletics. Yeah, you can go to some big state school, but here it's going to be personalized. It's going to be, you're going to get what you need to be successful. Priority two, grow research and high impact. That wouldn't be as relevant. I don't know that you guys are high on research. Expand external partnerships also wouldn't be. We came up with three better ones for you all. And then you would lay it out, and you would have strategies or initiatives and objectives over the next 3 years. This is that Cotter model I talked about, creating a sense of urgency. That's number one step. No change will happen if everybody doesn't agree we need to make some change. If there are more than half the people on the board who think everything's just fine, you're not going to get change. You've got to get a sense of urgency, at least with the board chair, I guess, and the president. Those are the two most important ones. And the way you do that is you look at future threats. So this is right from John Cotter. Look at potential opportunities, open dialogue, et cetera. Then you got to build a coalition. Then you got to have that exciting vision. And then you get into this, an army. This is all project management. But these are hard. I don't think they're that hard. You can do it with data. But you do have to have clarity. These things get muddled up when you get too many words in it and too many people in it. It all kind of gets muddled. You've got to keep it super clear. It's really what leadership is. Here's an example from the UNC College of Arts and Sciences. I did a project for that dean who became our chancellor for the institution. The mission. This is for 80% of UNC Chapel Hill. 30,000 students. 80% go through the College of Arts and Sciences. It's like 50 departments. So they had to come to a compelling statement to pull it all together. Think, communicate, collaborate, create for meaningful lives. Reimagining arts and sciences for the public good. That's their differentiation. Student-focused, scholarly excellence, strategically bold. So the dean wanted them to do things differently. They had to change their curriculum, expand their research, and they tell the story. They weren't telling the story very well either. And so this is the definition of implementation planning. You have to get objectives and initiatives. So these are the objectives for the next 3 years. I think they did a four-year plan. Objectives and initiatives. The initiatives, somebody owns each of those initiatives. Those are the objectives and the initiatives. Objectives and initiatives. By the way, they did all of these, and they raised $600 million. So they literally did all this. This is like about 7 years old. But this is a big one about communication and marketing. I mean, think about it. Think about a national reputation for Wesleyan education. What does it mean? It means real world, but a solid core. I'm making all this up. You know, what can you get there you can't get other places? Maybe it is this idea of personalized education. It's like one-on-one. And then this, you got to put some metrics associated with it. This was Arizona State. It has a lot more information, but I told you, not whom it excludes, but whom it includes and how they succeed. And they have done an unbelievable. They've transformed the institution. All right. Any questions or discussions before we go? We're right on time. Go to our team exercise. I just brought them up at trustee meetings, I didn't work within the channels of get it through the chair, get it through the committees, get the president on board. I would just say, have we ever thought of this? And then it would never go anywhere. Yeah.
Right? Which is that motivation that you're talking about there. And key to that, because I think when folks like this hear dropping your revenues potentially with some of this tactics that you suggest, and the potential to...
Dropping your tuition, not necessarily dropping your revenue. That's a big difference.
but any sense of receiving less and spending more, the fear is, well, what is, how are we going to survive? And I think one of the tools is that, you know, reference to return on investment. How do you ensure, how do you help people to understand that investing, that spending more really does help you over time, and what time frame it would be, depending on whatever your overall strategy is, to actually reap the benefits that we know are possible.
Yeah,
And
that's a really good point you made. Stay tuned for my multi-year forecasting session later this afternoon, where I'll actually give examples of that. But you're absolutely right. There was. Let's face it. Your CFO, Bill, no, Jim, your CFO's so darn busy just keeping up with the regular financials, that probably nobody's doing. Strategic, maybe now after COVID, doing strategic scenario analysis. Well, let's develop a set of assumptions. And what happens if we make this change? What does it do to enrollments? And what does that do to tuition? And what about if we change the tuition price? And what does that do to the discount rates? And put it all in a model and take it out over time. But consultants do that. I got MBAs, undergrads. We can whip up a model quickly. The trustees shouldn't be doing that, but they probably have skills to understand. Some people do. But so building the business, that's another thing I did wrong. I didn't build a case for it. I just kind of shot from the hip in these meetings, and it didn't get traction, so I didn't push on it. But you do have to build a business case for change. So you got to have that vision, but you got to have some evidence to back it up that it's realistic, and do some modeling. Yep.
So businesses regularly think risk reward.
They do.
Academic institutions have a very hard time.
They're more risk adverse.
We are. They understand all the reasons for it. The other thing that I say, again, as a person of faith, and I know it's hard, is that as people of faith, that perhaps we need to
preach
flip
it.
That script, right?
Preach it.
I mean, the basic business case to argue is, and maybe I had those financials wrong, but it looked like I thought Rick Meyer did some sort of prosperity gap. And I mean, if you're starting to not cover your expenses, that gets people to wake up. And if you project that out and say, if we don't do any changes, again, in my session this afternoon, if you start seeing a widening of the gap, then you're like, we got to close, we can't wait. And I've worked with some institutions where it widened. In fact, I came to one small institution, and they're like, we're pretty good on our strategy. We just need you to help us do some facilitation with the campus. And so I looked at their financials, and I said, you realize you had a $5 million operating deficit last year and a $1 million operating deficit the year before, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better next year? And they're like, what? The board's like, what? And it was right in their financials. And all heck broke loose. Can you say hell? With meth? Okay. Because they're all of a sudden they're like, whoa, what? And the CFO had just left under a cloud, and it was.
Yeah, I think how you get this started is you got to have some success, small success first.
You can do that.
And you can't do this all, but have some small success, and then people will say, hey, that investment paid off. We can do another one, you know, and you just start doing that. This is not something we can do overnight. got to have some success, and people will see it, and then they'll start buying into you and say, let's go and investigate.
You could do it organically and build it up with success. That you do want to show successes, but I don't know if you're saying that you can't also do it with a top down high level vision of, you know, what we could become.
But everybody was saying it here, no one's buying. No one's going to allow you to do that
without a convincing business case.
Yes, that's the problem, because this is a risk adverse atmosphere.
Yep, no doubt.
And where we're at, it's not business. So a good leader is going to have to say, hey, we're going to do this, and then show that, hey, I was successful, you can trust me. We're going to do that, and just keep growing that, I think, is the way. And the board's got to be behind it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that culture of change is so critical in Spartan. Connor talks a lot about the difference between surviving and thriving. What are some of the thriving questions in strategic planning versus surviving questions that we're all asking?
Yeah. Growth is a thrive. Yeah. There are many institutions that are not talking about growth. Yeah. They're just like, oh, we're in tough financial, let's cut. Yeah. And so they're not saying what new programs should we launch, what new partnerships, what new investments should we make. So you get into a spiral if you don't have – that's my biggest thing, is if you don't have a growth conversation. And the growth is challenging, but it's out there, non-degrees. Some faculty are like, what? We're not going non-degrees, but that's a real thing. And let's imagine a world where 25% of our revenue in 5 years is non-degrees. Some people can't imagine that, but that should be real. New degrees that we don't offer today. They're like, oh, it takes 2 years to start a new degree program. All right, we need to make it faster. Or we're going to partner with someone who has it. That's the fastest way. That's what I think you got. If you got good collaboration with other institutions and one of the other Wesleyans has a major you don't have, you can offer that major. But you got to do it, you got to work out hybrid. And that won't make everybody delighted, but it's doable. So that I think the biggest thing, you're right, survive is usually about cut, and thrive in me in higher ed is the few institutions that actually talk about growth. Okay, here's my exercise for you. In your table groups, first individually, and no looking it up. I know some of you did, but I won't call you out. Individually, I want you to fill this out for your institution. And you're lucky because they only gave me... Actually, I think we got about right. They gave me 15 per segment, so I think we're in good shape. Put your institution at the top. You don't have to turn it in. Sometimes I do these with all my strategy workshops, and sometimes when I did them for the Navy, they wanted them, all their admirals to turn it in, and I had to grade them. Put your name of your institution at the top, and put down, I'll put the definitions back up, but what's the mission? What's the vision? What are the values, and what are the priorities? And no looking it up. No, this is a memory test. That's the whole reason I'm doing it, to see if anybody can recall it. And it's an individual exercise first, so no chatting with your colleagues. That's why I wanted you to split up. And it's not just what you think they should be based on today's discussion. It's what's the articulated strategy from your campus. I guess, or you can make it whatever you want. There's probably a natural tendency to say, here's what I think they should be. Okay, so now you have 10 minutes to talk in your groups about how that experience felt and what your reaction is and what your key takeaways are, and then we'll debrief as a full group. So in your table groups, you can share your strategies if you want. Just
my
Okay, let's wind up and report out.
You're adjourned.
So there's a motion to adjourn? insights or thoughts from the exercise? You don't have to share all your strategies, just what did you learn during the exercise? So we'll start with this table, and then we'll go each table.
For me, it was foggy because, and I'll give one excuse. We just had a change of president.
Sure.
Okay, but it's foggy, and it needs to be more concise and easier for me. But roll off the list.
Okay. So you bring up a good point. Another group also had a change in leadership. I didn't talk about this, but we all did. mission of an institution like yours should not change with a new leader. Vision could change. Values probably shouldn't change. And priorities may change, likely may change. But there also is probably some priorities that are relevant now that will be relevant the next 3 years too. So it's sometimes new leaders come in and say, all the strategy's got to change, and I'm not a fan of that. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Let's take a look at it. Do we have a clear mission? Do we have a clear vision? How are the priorities? Let's see. You definitely will need to change some of the initiatives, the lower level. But so that's a reaction to change in leadership in terms of something. I forgot to say this, too. What's the purpose of strategy? To guide decision-making and to increase morale. And allocate resources. Those are the three reasons you have strategy. I should have said that in the beginning. Why do you even do strategy? To guide decision making, so and allocate resources, that's one of the biggest decisions you're guiding. What should we be putting money and effort toward? That's what you do strategy for. And also to increase morale. So somebody's still making decisions about all that right now with some sort of guiding principles, but they might not be clear. And so your other observation was it felt foggy to you. How many of you said it felt a little foggy when you did the exercise? It wasn't crystal clear to do it. Oh, wow. The rest. How many said it was clear? Wait. You got to be one or the other.
Super foggy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, wait. You wanted me to go one step further beyond foggy? I was wondering why there were no hands up.
Our president has been in his seat for 6 months, and he's not the newest.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Oh, amongst the family. Okay, I got you. I was like...
I think Jim's better than that. I think Jim's... It was
what a wonderful opportunity with new energy for leadership. Okay, so other observations from this table?
I don't expect a board, and I'm on other boards, but I don't expect a board to know every jot and tittle.
Does this feel like every what and tittle?
Jot and tittle.
Oh, I don't know the expression.
So every detail.
Does this feel detailed, what I asked you to recall?
For a board member in serving in other institutions, I would have a difficult time just covering every piece of this. I expect the administration to come in contrary to popular opinion, perhaps, but to go to the mountain, come to the board, and ask for ratification and ownership. And any tweaks that they want to offer. But to be able to go and make that statement, now that's the goal of an administration, to educate a board and help them to own that.
Okay.
And be able to reiterate that. But I don't think that happens very often.
So you felt comfortable with it. You felt your team would be comfortable with it. But you wouldn't expect your board to be able to do this.
I wouldn't expect my whole board to be able to do this. I have a 36-member board.
Okay. Interesting. Glad you're here to share that. Other thoughts from this table?
I'm not sure how I would summarize what we talked about. We hit a lot of different areas, and representing three different schools here and more of the corporate side, what I would say about this conversation, there's a lot of discussion about different aspects. How does it, does one institution... maybe in a situation where they may or may not survive. So how does a board deal with that? That that particular question. That's a gigantic question I have to deal with. You know, how much business can we bring in to an institution? This whole idea of our institutions being more cooperative, there's some pros and there's some cons to that. And you know, how do we sort that out to know which way to go? What's the ways we can cooperate and what's some of the, you know, the challenges for doing it? So I guess they're just, am I being fair? There's a lot of conversation about that. And in terms of your exercise, I think what it pointed out to me, I mean, I got some things down. I think I got most of it. Not most of it. I got a few of our items covered. But what it pointed out to me was, I do rely on this. I don't memorize a lot of stuff anymore. So I would go to the Indiana Westland website, you know, what's our, yeah, that's right, that is our mission. But to be able to write it down, that's a bit of a challenge.
Okay. And third table?
You guys, you have too many board chairs at this table.
Well, one of the things that I would say is that we maybe perhaps we're not as granular on this, but what this pointed to is that we have a number of transitions which are pointing to a lot of change and change management issues that are going on. And so we kind of went high level on how does change management occur, how should it occur, what should it look like, and ultimately with the goal of together we are all better, but what does that look like as we grind down to that in the midst of so much change?
And frankly, the challenge that together we're all better and we shouldn't duplicate resources, complicated by the fact that that should be championed from a place where it's not being championed.
Yeah, and you brought up an interesting point about if you're going to be a system, do you need a system infrastructure? And you know, as
a... more complicated than that.
Well, I didn't mean...
In our case, it's do we need another system infrastructure?
Another system. So there is a system-wide infrastructure?
We're all owned and operated by the same place.
And we have a board.
A board for all Wesleyan...
Yeah.
Where are they here?
Some of us are here.
Oh, so there's a governing board.
Everybody on the web is here.
But is there a system wide president chance? You know what I mean? Is there a? I didn't understand what that meant.
Neither do we.
Well, listen, as someone who's part of a 17 institution system, sometimes the system gets in the way. Quite frankly, I mean, we've got a big infrastructure at UNC. Now, they've had some decent leadership and had some clear guidelines, some clear priorities, and gave good guidance and made institutions identify what's unique. So they've done some good things, but they also sometimes meddle too much. There's got to be a happy medium. There are some, you know. It seems to me, again, I don't know all of your dynamics, but if there's a board, then there should probably be a joint strategy, and probably you need a person to be the champion of that strategy across campuses, I would think. I wouldn't be a proponent of build a big infrastructure and have a system-wide provost and a system-wide CFO and all kinds of mandates, but at least a lean system-wide strategy champion seems like it could be nice. Now, I know it sounds like additional resources. Take everything I say with a grain of salt, because I do not know your dynamics and I haven't done a study.
Well, what their history has been is being a board governing the competition, which is us, against each other by boundaries.
Oh.
We can't go into Jim's boundary. He can't go into our back. You know, that's what it was. Now, that is starting to break down. It is going to break down.
Hopefully, it could be a board. It could become a board of collaboration.
Yeah. But that's the history.
Yeah. Because there's plenty of other people competing with you. Okay. Well, that's it for this segment. Thank you for your time. I hope you got a takeaway, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.